Chapter 36. Scars, Scraps, and Salvage. The stage that was Interview Room 3 never changed. Only the actors came and went. The long pine table still stood at right angles to the wall, which was still in need of whitewash. The tall grilled window had been boarded over, though after, as Inspector Pound had told us on the way, being smashed by an inebriated bottle seller with one of her wares. Prince Ulrich sat at that table, straight as a broomstick, with a constable behind him.
"Stay seated,"
the constable commanded, but the Prussian snapped smartly to his feet and held out his hand, horizontally as if to kiss mine. I did not offer it in return, but sat in one of the three wooden chairs facing him. The men remained standing, sizing each other up, the prince lazy-eyed and the inspector coolly, and my guardian might have been a referee between two prize-fighters. Sidney Gryce stepped back, clipped his pince-nez on the bridge of his long, thin nose, and looked the Prussian up and down.
"I wonder if you are as false as your dueling scar."
Prince Ulrich tilted his head in acknowledgement of the observation.
"How can you tell?"
"For the slash of a sabre to have cut such a straight line, it would have to have smashed through your zygomatic arch, and you would have a permanent indentation,"
Mr. G. explained.
"You have none. Therefore the scar was caused by a careful incision."
"They were quite the fashion when I was a cadet,"
the prince admitted.
"But they have to run up to the eye for the correct effect, a dangerous feat and difficult to pull off with a sabre. And so I have a bottle of schnapps and my friends perform the operation with a bayonet."
"I am glad I do not have such friends," I commented.
"But you have not introduced me to yours,"
the prince reminded me. "Mr. Sidney Gryce," I said shortly.
"I recognized you at the inquest."
The Prussian clicked his heels in a way that I had only seen on the stage before.
"But for us to meet in person is an honour."
He bowed his head stiffly.
"It is," my guardian agreed.
"For whom?" I inquired, but Sidney Gryce waved me to be quiet.
"May I see your hands, Prince Ulrich?"
he asked, a great deal more politely than he would of most suspects, and the prince held them out palms up. Mr. G. bent until he was almost touching them.
"Excellent. I am glad you are approving. And the backs, if you please."
Prince Ulrich rotated his wrists.
"Do you cut your own nails?"
Sidney Gryce sniffed them.
"Do you? I am not here to be questioned by you. Nor I by you. Kindly expose the soles of your boots to my inquisitive gaze."
The German flared his nostrils, but nonetheless turned his back to raise his left foot, and then his right.
"Hauenstein leather," Sidney Gryce observed. "And the left again, please."
He brought out a pencil and scraped a fleck of dried mud onto the cover of his notebook, holding it up to the window and smelling it.
"Pity."
He blew it away.
"Please be seated, Your Highness."
The prince glided back onto his seat, and the other two sat either side of me.
"Pound,"
Prince Ulrich said thoughtfully.
"I knew a Herr Pound. He was a vulgar fellow."
The inspector bristled. But I was used to the prince's trick by now. "I know a Prince Ulrich," I put in. "Odious specimen. He attacks women." The prince sniffed.
"A gentleman seeks his pleasure where he can." "So does a street dog,"
Pound told him. Prince Ulrich raised a hand as if to slap the inspector with the back of it.
"Mein Gott, if you spoke to me like that in my country. Unfortunately for you, this is my country, and if you do not lower your hand immediately, I shall charge you with threatening a police officer in front of three witnesses,"
Pound said angrily.
"Schweinigel,"
the Prussian hissed, but pulled his arm down.
"Well, this is jolly."
Sidney Gryce whipped off his pince-nez and jabbed them to within half an inch of the Prussian's left eye.
"You were apprehended allegedly in the process of purchasing a woman for the purpose of outraging her against her will."
My guardian made a quick note in his own shorthand.
"And what a poor purchase she was,"
Schlangazan sneered.
"I have seen better scraps thrown to the butcher's cat."
Inspector Pound drew a sharp breath, but I touched his sleeve quickly. "You thought you had paid for me?" I inquired.
"You have not begun to pay for me yet, Prince Ulrich, nor any of those you have abused."
The Prussian half lowered his eyelids, and he tilted his head back.
"I have not been charged with any others."
Sidney Greif snapped his notebook shut.
"You have an excuse."
And the prince eyed him indolently.
"I do not make excuses. Whatever you call it."
Mr. G. flapped his hand irritably. "Let us hear it, and then we can all go home for a nice cup of tea." Prince Ulrich curled his lip.
"Only the English could regard leaves soaked in water as the height of sophisticated pleasure."
He yawned behind the side of his fist.
"Very well. I too am appalled by the account of the fates of your womanhood. Your police have proved to be impotent and incompetent. This had better be good,"
Pound warned.
"For you won't have a comfortable night if we put you in the cells." "And so,"
the prince continued,
"I decided to set my own trap, use the services of a—"
His long fingers combed the air for a word.
"Procurer. And once he had taken my money, to hand him over to the authorities. I was no more to know that the procurer was trying to catch the villain than he was to know I was doing the same."
"But you pulled my hair," I remembered.
"I played my part, as you played yours."
The prince batted my accusation away like an annoying bluebottle. Mr. G. slipped his notebook away and stood up.
"Good day, Oberst,"
he nodded.
"You will wait in my office, Mr. Grice."
Pound's voice was icy.
"I shall,"
my guardian concurred,
"but not today. Farewell, Inspector." "That was not a question."
I had never known George Pound to exhibit such bottled anger.
"I beg to differ."
With a swish of his Ulster overcoat, Sidney Greis was gone, his ward trailing sheepishly back up the corridor.